And here we are, the Staggering Stories team, thrown back millions and millions of years to observe Earth's natural prehistoric wildlife. And it's fascinating. And here we see a magnificent example of Tyrannosaurus Rex.
Wow!
Oh my God!
And as it rapidly approaches it... Oh dear. Oh well. That's the girls gone. And there goes Crumbly.
Run away!
Ah, Scarfer!
Run away!
Welcome, one and all, to this, the latest in a long line of Staggering Stories podcast. I'm Jay.
I'm Adam.
I'm Asdaman.
And I am merely Keith.
Very lonely Keith.
I've been going around randomly hugging people.
You have, yeah.
They're getting rather disturbed.
Yes, I am also rather disturbed by this, with the one that you gave me. So,
yes, yeah. Sorry.
You've let go of Jay now.
Safe to record.
Right. Sorry about the hands.
Don't put them there.
It's a security thing, Jay.
Yes. Prehistoric nonsense beside, it's time for the news. Will El Presidente.
Woohoo!
I thought you were going to say random groping aside.
I can do random groping. I'm open for anything.
So hope the girls are listening.
Jumanji! Open world trailered. The fourth and potentially final Jumanji film is due the crowded December cinema. And we now have our first trailer.
Mm.
You had to get the full name in, didn't you?
Yes.
Karen Sheila Gillan is again joined by Thomas Jacob Jack Black, Kevin Darrell Hart, and Dwayne Douglas Johnson in Jumanji, Open World. Despite what will be a 7-year gap between films, this one carries on directly from the mid-credit scene of the previously namely Jumanji, The Next Level. And we'll see the characters from the game spill into the real world again. The film opens on Christmas Day, or maybe the 23rd of December, reports vary, and will be completing with Dune Part 3, Avengers Doomsday, that opens a week earlier on the 18th of December.
That is a very crowded December.
That is.
Also, there's that David Harbour Evil Santa film sequel coming out at the same time.
I saw the trailer for that. That looks amusing.
Okay.
So we know what we're doing in December then. We're going to be living at the cinema.
Booking up the cinema.
Short of money as it is with Christmas presents, but we'll treat ourselves.
Definitely will see Dune and Avengers Doomsday.
Yes.
And of course, Jumanji.
At some point I should try and see Dune Part 2.
Yeah.
I keep promising myself to do that and I never get around to it.
I'm saving it.
Marvel, One Wonder Man cancelled. Disney have long been scaling back their ambitions for their streaming service, Disney Plus, and they have announced a sudden reversal on their decision to renew the Marvel series Wonder Man. Back in March, Disney announced the second season of the Ben Kingsley, Yahya Abdul-Mateen II, and Olivia Thirlby series, hot on the heels of the first season that dropped on Disney Plus in late January. Showrunner and co-creator Andrew Guest said of this situation, "This is not a marketing stunt. There is no movie in the works, and no one's schedule was an issue. Yaha, Destin, Sir Ben, and I all loved making this show. All felt passionately about continuing to do it, and were eager to. Contracts were signed, schedules were cleared, writers' room was supposed to start this month, production was supposed to begin early next year, and there was a decision made internally between Disney and Marvel that this didn't make sense for them. even though a few months ago it did. And essentially, that's all I really know.
Mm. Not a happy man then.
No.
Spider-Man : Brand New Day is currently in cinemas, and the next Marvel proper live-action project will be the aforementioned Avengers : Doomsday, no relation to Doctor Who's Doomsday Abomination, in December. My goodness, so many colons.
Yeah. Rumour has it that Disney Plus is now only going to be going animation.
Right.
They're no longer doing any live action stuff.
That's crazy talk.
Well, I mean, they're probably still going to get the films on there once they've been in cinemas.
But nothing exclusively for...
Yeah, I mean, certainly they've not been doing that well with their live action television series.
Yeah.
A number of things have been not a very good success in the Star Wars vein of things. I don't think the Ahsoka series did that well the first season, even though we're getting a second one soon.
Yeah.
Andor, of course, did well. I mean, it has been very well acclaimed. But, I mean, even Mandalorian kind of tailed off in the end. And the most recent live-action series wasn't as good as the previous ones were.
No. It's a shame. So, they do throw a lot of ideas out there. Mm. They don't seem to stick with people, do they? They get through their first season, and then, for the most part, people are already talking about cancellations now.
Yeah.
I think as well, I mean, you've got a lot of stuff that's happening with this Paramount Warner Brothers merger, and there's talk about them doing more film releases, and I think Disney could be stepping up to try and compete with that as well.
Yeah. Could be is the streaming bubble bursting?
Yeah, it's pretty much doing that. Netflix is the only one that seems to be the go-to for everybody. Yeah. Everybody keeps a Netflix going.
Yeah.
The others they just dip into and out of.
Yeah.
I mean, even I'm not someone that watches telly on transmission. I just make it fit round me and search out a specific program when I'm in the mood for it. There's not that sort of big event television with it. Yeah. Particularly not with any Doctor Who coming out.
Well, Disney again. Disney Plus.
Yeah. The other streaming service that I can think of is Prime Video, and I'm just trying to remember the last, I mean, other than Good Omens, the last live-action thing that you watched in there. Prime's had some pretty good things that have come up in there before.
The Boys, good Fallout series, quite good. It's
not quite as prolific as I think as some of the other ones out there.
No, although they spent absolute fortune on that to Rings of Power. Crazy amount of money on that.
Stupid money, which I don't think is quite the success they hoped it was.
Nothing like it. I quite enjoyed the first season, but I cancelled my subscription a while back when they suddenly introduced ads halfway through my contract.
Yeah.
I paid it a year up front in Prime for Prime Video, and then halfway through they say, you've got to pay £3 a month now if you don't want adverts.
Yeah.
Hold on, I paid a year up front.
Yeah.
Don't change the contract on me halfway through.
I can understand that view. We've recently just rejoined Amazon, so the adverts were there.
Yeah.
I'm used to adverts for my TV, so I've recently caught back up with the third and fourth season of Upload.
Oh, right.
I want to get back to that as well. Something I enjoyed back in the day.
That was a fun little series. And I mean,
I watched the first and second series, then we lost that. We moved away from Amazon.
The adverts in Amazon aren't that intrusive. I mean, typically you may get like one ad break during it. So it's not like a YouTube thing where you're just watching YouTube and you get an advert like every 50 seconds or something.
My experience is you'll get a couple of adverts beforehand. About halfway through, you'll get maybe three adverts. And then at the last 10 minutes or last 20 minutes, you'll get one advert.
Mm-hmm. And that's on a film?
That's on a film.
Yeah, so they front load them, do they? Which makes sense.
And sometimes you might even luck out and not have anything. You might just have like one thing at the beginning, whereas we'll just give you one big advert here. And after that, you're good all the way through. Yeah. Mm.
This is why
I can understand your frustration if you've paid that money up front.
And you had a contract not to watch adverts.
It's
as if somebody is saying, I am altering the deal. Pray I don't alter it further.
Absolutely.
Well, I mean, it's probably one of these things which is buried in the terms and conditions where it's people don't read those things. Yeah. We know people don't read those things. So it's probably something in there where it says we reserve our right to change it at any time.
But, still bad to do it. Yeah. So I cancelled.
No, I can understand your outrage.
Amazon Prime for years and years and years. Yeah. And now I hardly buy anything from Amazon at all because I don't have Prime anymore. So it's really hurt them. They've lost a lot of money out of me. I literally spent thousands of pounds a year with Amazon. Not anymore. Anyway.
Right then.
We digress.
Yes.
Metropolis.
Oh, yeah.
Live cinematic concert UK tour. The 1927 Fritz Lang sci-fi classic Metropolis is getting a special and rather odd-sounding UK tour that melds the film with live rock music. Ooh. Crumbly will be chuffed.
Yeah.
The Los Angeles-based Vox Lumiere has created 9 cinematic concert productions that combine silent movies with live contemporary soundtracks, spanning rock, gothic, and pop influences, performed live in sync with the film.
Ooh.
The UK tour starts on the 8th of September in Birmingham. On the 10th of September, it will be at the nearby Epsom Playhouse, a regular Doctor Who convention venue. It will be in Hove, where I work, on the 12th of September. Hit the Greenwich Theatre on the 26th of September. Finish at Stockport on the 11th of October, and has many other dates and venues in between.
It's getting about a bit.
Yeah. The full schedule can be seen on the website at voxlumiere.com.
Link in the show notes, of course. Sounds interesting.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of the film. Yeah.
I'm wondering, because when it first was re-edited or redone, it was done with a rock soundtrack.
Yeah, I've never seen that version. Yeah.
No, I've never seen that version.
I've actually never seen it.
So
yeah, I believe there was something of a backlash.
Okay,
at the time.
Inevitably.
Yeah.
I don't know. It varies, doesn't it? It's a bit like having updated special effects in your film or something. But makes it interesting.
I'm actually not that familiar with the film. Is it a silent film?
Yes.
It is. It's a German.
1927.
Has a very futuristic sort of city, a metropolis, basically, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And the first android used in the film.
The first recognisable android.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen the image of that. Yeah, I mean, that's a very well-known image, but
has come back many times as well. 3PO, Cybermen.
Yeah, 3PO is very, very reminiscent.
But we did a film night here, didn't we, on the big screen?
I believe we did. Oh, I believe we did.
Yeah. It's worth
when
a watch.
We reviewed it.
Yeah.
I wouldn't mind going along to Epsom one, but it's almost sold out.
Really?
I want to do it fairly soon.
Yeah, I mean, Epsom would. I'd go down to that one. I mean, Epsom is literally just down the road from me, so.
Yeah.
And we love rock music, so we might be unlucky and get the pop version.
I think this is all rock music, I think, in this version. I think other films have been more pop.
So you don't want Disco Duck?
Disco Duck. Any addendums?
I had an addendum, but I can't find it now.
Oh. Are you sitting on it?
No. It was about Who. It was a Who addendum.
Oh.
And apparently it's...
some production company has been interested.
Yes.
Yeah.
We're going to get that a lot
this,
now.
This is completely unofficial. So.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
There will be many production companies bidding, presumably.
But allegedly...
In fact, the one that's come out and said it is probably a good indication they won't get it.
Yeah.
Allegedly, according to this news report, which I might be misremembering, so I can't even remember who it was about.
Some American company.
It was offered to them before BBC put it out to tender.
Oh.
So that's a little bit of controversy there, but I can't find the addendum, so just ignore me.
Yeah, I saw a headline, I didn't read it, but I saw a headline about them approaching Tennant.
Yes, there's lots of videos popping up on YouTube, actually, with Tennant on there, so I haven't bothered to watch them, because you know what's coming, don't you?
Well, I was looking for addendum material, but after
nothing official.
After Comic Con,
I really don't want them to go back to Tennant again. I mean,
no,
I would rather them cast somebody who's unknown. I mean, Shooty was an up and coming star.
Yes,
and Tennant. I mean, his star has risen a lot since he was in there. Yes. Same with Matt Smith.
Yeah.
It's fine to sort of have this as a career launch. I mean, this has been the case for many of the Doctors. But to actually have someone who's already a well known name as Shooty was going to be, it does hem them in a lot when they are looking to sort of try and expand what they're doing.
Maybe.
So, as I said, I'd rather just have someone who's unknown, just about to really launch their career.
On the cusp.
Yes.
Yeah. What's David Burton doing nowadays?
Yeah. So with a bit of staying power, a bit of loyalty, get at least 3 years for another regeneration, because they're a bit overdone now. They're losing their impact.
Yeah, I'd like 4 years.
Yeah. 4 years, ideally, yeah.
Pertwee 5.
Yeah.
Enough time to get a new range of toys out, options.
Huge hair by the end.
Yeah.
That is one of the problems, is because we've having a new actor every 3 years, you've got to rebrand it
every time.
It feels like not very long to us,
yeah,
but to children and younger people, 3 years is a long time.
Yes.
Anyway.
Here endeth the news.
Here endeth the news. Staggering Stories, the final podcast. Boldly going where no bold podcast has boldly gone before.
Through space and time.
Boldly.
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 Oi!
We're all pretty bold.
We've been watching Paramount TV.
Paramount.
Yes.
Paramount Plus.
Paramount Plus.
Not Paramount Negative.
No. Minus. And we have been watching Star Trek Strange New Worlds. Pause for music.
Although technically the first one wasn't a Strange New World at all.
Hello.
Okay, this is the fourth season of Strange New Worlds, the penultimate season. Yes. And so far, three episodes have dropped.
And they are called Jurassic Trek, yeah. Ghost Trek,
right,
and Drug Trek.
Of course, by the time this goes out, the fourth one will be out. But, we haven't seen that yet.
As of recording. Yes. First one.
Valis Marineris.
That word.
I know. It had me at that moment.
Which is, what is it?
Jurassic Trek.
Crater on Mars, yes. I think so.
It's the long, big cut, the groove across it, yes.
Anyway, they're observing a space phenomenon.
As you do.
And get a little bit too close and get sucked in and then spat out.
65 million years ago.
65 million years ago.
First of all, they were sort of actually, they're getting sucked in because they go in to investigate a beacon. Which is calling for help. So they believe there's a ship that's caught in this great big storm.
Yeah, that's right. They need some supplies, don't they? Because their ship's burnt out.
Well, the ship gets knackered.
So they pop down to the nearest planet.
Iridium. Iridium, yes. Which has actually appeared in the show before.
Yes. Okay.
Some unobtainium.
Classic Trek thing.
I'm not sure if it's a classic or next gen, but I
believe it was a classic thing.
I'm willing to believe that I'm mistaken. So
they say they make things up in next gen more. It's much more tech.
They discover a T-Rex.
There's big animals that they can't see on the planet, hidden behind a tree, and then they have to sort of get the Enterprise to put down a big phaser blast, whatever, blow down the tree.
They shoot it in its mouth.
Yeah, they use the...
Well, that was a little bit later.
The new setting on the phaser, which is disintegrate, and actually zap out or chop down some of the trees.
And then they set it to stun and shoot the T-Rex in its soft palate.
Yeah, they shoot the T-Rex
close to the brain.
To no effect, and then have to shoot it in the soft palate.
That's it. Yeah.
So it means that number one has to get up close and personal.
Meanwhile, the Enterprise gets ensnared by another ship that suddenly appears. And these people turn out to be Martians.
Martians, aye.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Look, I thought they were meant to be Vulcans initially. They've got kind of Vulcan-y ears.
They got really... They look more like night elves or whatever, because they've got really long pointy ears. Not Vulcan pointy.
Are they meant to be proto-Vulcans or maybe... That's when they split off to become Romulans, but that's far too.
There's a couple of theories on this. We had the progenitors in the Next Generation series, The Chase, who was millions and millions of years ago, probably even predating this, seeded humanoid species around. So it could be that the Martians of this day and age, back 65 million years ago, that day and age, did go off and sort of try and do some colonization and ended up in far reaches of space and ended up on Vulcan and whatever. So,
well, they did say at the end of it there are trace amounts of DNA scattered through multiple races of the Federation. So, yeah, they have gone. But yes, these Martians have phase technology and just walk through walls.
They're next gen again.
Yeah.
They've come on board because they want weapons to fight against an insect race.
An insect race,
From
a fifth planet, which is an Earth oxygen type planet.
Yes. Which is exactly in the same orbit as the asteroid belt.
The asteroid belt.
As we know it.
Yes.
Where's this going?
I have to say, jumping ahead from the actual storyline, there was lots in here I really liked. I liked all the Mars. I loved going back in time.
Yeah.
But it left me wanting more. I really wanted a second part so that we could explore Mars, see more dinosaurs, and see the crew trying to avoid changing history a bit more. I thought that would have been nicer. But well, I really, really enjoyed
history,
I really enjoyed it.
I'm not sure if it's explicitly said, but as the theory is, that it's that the whole thing's a bootstrap paradox.
Yes, it definitely is.
The beacon that they pick up is the beacon that they release later.
This is the one where Pellier, is it? She makes a reference to the phone box.
Yes. Yeah, when they see the time, Eddie, she's like, oh, I think I saw one of those, but I think I was in a phone box.
Yeah. And then they go and crap all over poor Adric, who gave his life to wipe out the dinosaurs.
This is true.
Here they rewrite history. And
They drop a bit of the planet on Earth blows up.
They do. They tie it all up quite well, don't they? Because they destroy Mars, so there's no water. Yeah. There's no life.
Yeah.
They wipe out the dinosaurs. Mm-hmm. They resolve their own bootstrap paradox at the same time. But yeah, I could have done with the two parts, just to explore every single element a bit more. Because it did seem that when the captain of the other ship came on board, there seemed to be some sort of development in the relationship where she was opening up to the Federation's way of life and the captain. Mm-hmm. But then in the next scene, she's like, well, I told you what I was going to do, now I'm doing it. And it was off. And it didn't come as a surprise, but it would have had more impact had there been more development.
Because she found out that Pike had lied about when they were from.
Yeah, they were from the future.
Did he lie or did he withhold?
He withheld.
He didn't directly lie.
He was obeying the Prime Directive.
Well, Prime Directive.
Or even the Temporal Prime Directive.
Did they even have the Temporal Prime Directive at that point? I think it was a little bit too early.
But they didn't. She didn't have to discover it that early on in the story, I don't think.
And she discovered it off screen, I think, as well.
We didn't see any of that. Because
the next thing we know, they're walking through the ship towards the antimatter.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, it was very good.
It was discovered. I enjoyed it. I did enjoy it.
Yeah, it's good fun.
Yeah. Good opener.
Yeah.
We then move on to...
Spooky one.
The spooky one.
Ghost Trek.
Ghost Trek.
The Griffin incident.
The Griffin incident,
So, yeah, this was one to watch late at night when you're trying to sleep, wasn't it?
Star Trek's answer to Event Horizon.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's very Event Horizon.
It's very brutal, very horrific in places, scenes of torture.
Spock in his ears, chopped.
Yeah. Borderline on unnecessary gore.
It's very un-Trek. When you compare it to Discovery. But
the Strange New Worlds has been that way a few times.
I would say borderline, but I think the gore is deliberate, so it heightens the fear of the characters that are trapped.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, you're assuming there's an entity. You don't ever see the entity, but it's feeding off their fear.
Mm-hmm. What was feeding off their fear? I came out of it a bit confused.
The entity.
I mean, there is an entity. This is one of these stories that ends being still unexplained.
Yeah. Right. That's why it all gets resolved, and then you see someone at the end going, shh.
Well, I mean, it's a ghost story.
Yeah.
So if you watch anything, Friday the 13th, any of the Nightmare on Elm Street films, anything like that, the boogeyman suddenly jumps up in the last scene and I'm still here.
it did it really well for me, I always assume that I've missed something.
No, I need to
be more confident with myself.
Have you seen Event Horizon?
No, I was looking for it recently, actually. I've seen something similar that isn't quite Event Horizon.
It's a case of there was some form of incident where the ship went to warp or was carried away and has come back, but something's come back with it.
The drive that they were using, which was basically some kind of singularity drive, it pulled them into another dimension, which was widely believed to be some kind of hell dimension. Yeah. Yeah. And when it came back, well, all hell broke loose.
Something
with it.
Came back right. with it. And so, that's roughly what you've got here. The ship has been lost. Previously thought destroyed, but it's been lost, and something has inveigled itself in and come back with it.
That makes sense. Again, though, in that case, I kind of want another episode to finish it off. Because they were towing it back somewhere at the end, and I was thinking, well, I would have left it personally.
It's Division 12.
Yes.
Yeah. I love that Star Trek's the answer to the X-Files.
Yeah, apparently.
Yeah. I think Division 12 is
The next spin-off.
The next spin-off, but is new to this show.
Okay. Actually, I mean, it has been mentioned before. I believe it was... It might have been this of Tomorrow, the one where Kirk and Lan went back in time. I think that was where it was.
I'm not sure if that's Division 12 or the Department of Temple Investigations, but from the future.
Talking of Kirk, he turns up again.
Yes!
It's an away mission, is it?
There's a wonderful book, somebody's mocked up a pocketbook with Kirk and Picard, and the title of the book is, "What the hell are you doing on my ship again?"
I think the episode uses Spock quite well get to explore his past relationship.
Actually, I was wrong about Division 12. It was in Terrarium where Ortega's actually mentioned it.
Okay. Last season.
I mean, this is another step in the development of Spock because it's his logical, rational self that saves him.
Yeah.
I'm doing my Star Trek rewatch and I've recently just watched The Cage.
Okay. Oh, I love The Cage.
And the first time you see Spock, he's been in a fight previously, not seen, so he's limping. But there are leaves that are humming. When they're on the planet side, the reliefs, and he grabs two of them and smiles.
Yeah.
I mean, people are complaining that this is not Spock. He's far too emotional. But when you first see Leonard Nimoy playing Spock, he shouts, he's loud, and smiles.
They didn't know what the character was.
I acknowledge they didn't know what the character was, but it's there in footage. So we've getting there is a progression.
Yes, they're working towards that.
In this one, he finds refuge in logic. So it's another little brick in the wall.
And here we get some more backstory from Star Trek 3, is it? With Kirk and his son.
Two and three. Because, we got Karen Marcus and David Marcus introduced on the space station Regular One. And, he, of course... David Marcus died in Star Trek 3.
Yeah, there's a reference here about Kirk getting...
Son getting stabbed.
Yeah,
at the end of the knife in the darkness of space.
Yes, it had good chills about it. No, good direction.
I have to mention this. There is very brief footage out there of, the actress plays Leon.
Okay, Lorna Bucket.
Yeah, leading the zombies in engineering... In the Thriller dance from Michael Jackson.
Christina Chong.
Thank you. Christina Chong. Yes. Yeah, but there's footage of her and all the zombies doing the Thriller dance.
And the director of the episode was in there as well.
Far too much spare time, haven't they?
They were having fun with it. Well, I mean, when you've got a lot of people dressed up like zombies, of course, you have to do that. It's practically unwritten television film law.
They seem to be setting up in a longer game how to go right Lan out.
Yeah, I mean, she certainly loses it and embraces the entity at this point, you know, because she stabs Kirk and other things.
She does. She stabs it really badly. There's lots of blood towards the end of this. Yeah.
At the other side. It was straight through.
I mean, we had her punching the dinosaur in the first episode.
Breaking her hand. That was funny.
With no pain.
We have this with Kirk there. There's also the next episode where she's...
Taekwondo.
Ambujitsu or something that, yes.
Talking of the other ones, we finally have the last one, which
human
is...
Human Best Friend.
Drug Trek.
It's, it is...
It's there a bit trippy. Thing...
This is Strange New World's answer to The Hangover yes. and Dude, Where's My Car?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, or Dude, said, Where's My Shuttle?
They seem to be doing film homages.
Yes.
Because the first one was Jurassic Park.
Yeah.
This one was, the second one was Event Horizon.
Both of which had Sam Neill in, which we lost a bit ago. Yeah. So.
And now this one is certainly The Hangover, and I laughed a lot on this
yes.
one.
Yeah, I think we needed a little bit of lightness after the drama and the horror.
I've noticed the past two seasons of Strange New World is very much switchback.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We do drama, comedy, horror, drama, comedy.
Yeah.
Horror.
Yeah.
But anyway.
This was very much a two-hander between Erica Ortiz and... Don't call him Monty Montgomery Scott.
Yeah.
So far, we've been building up an antagonism between the two of them.
But yeah, it's absolutely great. My favourite scene from this episode is Pike's tattoo moment where he's just off his face going, no. My God, you should totally come round.
There's a couple of favourite scenes for me.
Yeah.
There's one, it's green.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's the third time that's been done with Scotty in direct.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm. What first time was...
Although this is chronologically the first.
Yeah.
Yeah.
First one was Strange, the original series with Scotty saying it.
Yeah.
Second one was Next Gen with Data saying it to Scotty.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And this one is Mbenga saying it to Scotty.
We also had a quick scene with a tribble running around loose.
Oh, well, I'm going to come back to that. Yeah. I'm going to come back to that. Also, you have to hear Total Eclipse of the Heart in its original Klingon.
Yeah. It sung really well, isn't it? Yeah.
But I don't know whether you see it.
It was appropriately translated.
Yes.
You can also see...
Well, because there's enough people out there who understand Klingon that would definitely call... this out if there was wrong. And Rebecca Rumgen, who plays number one, she said she had to be very, very careful in how she was doing this. And when they did it, she had recorded it beforehand and she was just singing to miming to the playback. Mm-hmm. On the set.
Yeah. But she was, there's footage of her being very nervous about singing it. What I liked about it is you had in the background the poster, the song chart with the other songs that she was going to be singing.
Oh, yes.
Romulan Rhapsody in Klingon, Let It Go, Bad Blood Wine.
Yes.
I don't know if either of you remember it, but at one point, I think it was the late 90s, early 2000s, you could take Klingon as a course at Crawley College.
Yeah. Crawley College, right? Yeah.
I didn't realise it was at Crawley, but I know you could take courses in Klingon. It is, like I said, Dude, How's My Car? Where's My Car? It's a treasure hunt, them trying to track down the shuttle.
Yeah.
Because they blacked out and moved the shuttle.
And they're barely functional.
Yeah.
Addled state.
Well, everyone is barely functional.
Yeah, they know, don't they? As soon as they get there and open that door, 10 seconds, they're all going to be off their faces. Hypercut.
But also, again, what I loved is Ethan Peck playing Spock, who's obviously completely debilitated and I can't function perfect.
He even says sorry about the mess and everything's immaculate.
He thinks he's imagining Kirk.
Yeah.
Ah, yes.
Inexplicably, he's still around.
Although the weird thing is that we find out that Kirk was actually there.
He was there. Yeah. He had to be there on holiday at the same time.
How did Kirk get up to the Enterprise when you saw them all in the shuttle heading back and Kirk was not on that shuttle?
Because he was in the toilet at the back, in the cubicle.
Other people would have noticed that.
What on earth was Uhura getting up to at that party?
She was
I wasn't sure if they were going down the orgy way with her. She looked a bit
It was a drugs party, but it's no drugs, it's just breathing the atmosphere. Yeah.
She was on her journey.
Yeah. And I love Spock hallucinating Ortegas as a cactus and Scotty as a bush. But they actually dressed the cactus and the bush in the uniform.
Yeah.
And again, Leanne seems to have taken over the relaxation, because it was a relaxation course where you sit there and just hum and think, and she's trying to turn it into an ambo jitsu.
Yeah.
Yes.
There were so many wonderful things in this episode. I mean, some of the lines they came out with, like Scotty saying that they've stolen his eyeballs.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Was just wonderful. You've got Chapel, who's getting ultra competitive about bingo.
Yep.
And I mean, it was almost like a Buffy reference with those sort of bat-like demons
looking
in, yeah, the old people,
yeah,
in there.
Yeah.
And the Vulcan, who was just impassively calling out the numbers.
Yep. Yeah. Also, I like to have a shout out to one, the Tribble.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Two, the Mugatu costume that Scotty wakes up in.
Which was fresh off the set from Starfleet Academy.
And three, on the, I think it was stuffed, I'm not 100% sure.
The dog.
But on the bed was the dog, which was the alien creature from Classic Trek episode. Where Kirk splits. I can't remember the name of the episode.
I had remembered what the name of the thing of the dog was, and I can't remember now. So it's one of those things that.
So it was it was almost Lower Decks in its Easter eggs.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, three very strong episodes for me. I really enjoyed it. It was quite a refreshing after the disappointment I felt with Starfleet Academy.
It was
just so nice to come back to something that feels more Trek.
Yeah. And it can still do the comedy.
Yeah. Apparently the next one is a noir episode.
Okay.
I do like how they change it up every time.
Yeah. It's like a mixtape, isn't it?
Yeah.
Keeps it fresh. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, this one, I think they've actually said that they were sort of kind of lifting from various films for this season. So I'm actually curious as to what one they're doing from this episode.
Oh, we'll watch this space.
But it's a very strong start to the season so far. I'm still skeptical of the Muppet episode when that comes down. Unless it's handled really, really well, I just don't know how that's going to be.
I'm
worried about that one. That's the one I'm most worried about.
Angel did a good job with
of it. Anyway, have you been watching Strange New Worlds?
I have.
Tell us what you think. Dropping us a little message at
show
at
staggeringstories.net.
Woohoo!
Right, it's that time again.
Ooh.
To find out what's happening on Gene Watch.
Dun, 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 dun.
Hello, and welcome to episode 2 of Gene Watch. We are out of the hospital.
Yay.
We're having some very good days. We're having some not so good days. We have a scar on our belly the size of the Grand Canyon. But we are being sensible. We've only been threatened with calling in the reserves because we won't sit down twice, maybe three times. We're eating. Things are moving on the inside quite rapidly, we're looking a lot healthier than we did when we scared the living crap out of all our friends.
Yeah.
That's it for this week's episode of Gene Watch. Farewell.
Oh, glad to hear that's moving.
Good. Yeah. I was up there over the weekend. Things were definitely moving.
Oh, yeah.
A tide of things.
Mm-hmm. A tide.
I see what you're trying to accomplish there with that little segue.
Yes.
Go on, take that segue and run with it.
We have been listening to some Doctor Who.
Oh, yes.
Yes. Some classic Big Finish from back in the day when they first started and were finding their feet.
Number 22, I believe.
That's it.
The main range.
Sixie and Smythe in Blood Tide.
Ooh.
They still use the original theme.
They do. Yeah. This is the point where they haven't secured using the...
Yeah. Well, isn't it the Pertwee version that's got that little staccato
thing?
Yeah.
Yes, so we've got the Pertwee version. So, Sixie has a surprise for Smythe.
I love this pairing that the Doctor has with Evelyn Smythe. I think that she is one of the best Big Finish companions.
Yeah, it is.
And I so miss Maggie Stables.
Yeah, yes. I have to say that the first 50 themselves, they're well worth going back and listening to. And this is a good example.
I do every now and again sort of dig out old ones and just re-listen to all of them again.
That's it. So Sixie has got a surprise for Smythe.
Oh, yes.
He's taken her to meet a very young Charles Darwin at an important moment in his own past, his own life, where he's going to make some discoveries.
He's coming up with ideas.
That's it.
Ooh, dangerous ideas.
Dangerous ideas. Yes. Certainly for the time, yes.
Yeah. And the Doctor doesn't tell Evelyn exactly where they are, but once she realises she's on Galapagos...
The tortoise.
Then she works it out for herself. So she squeezes for a bit. She's very excited.
She does have a moment.
She does. And then she has her own sort of little side adventure with Charles Darwin. Oh, yes. She seems to be there for those important moments for him.
It's quite a few interesting conversations they have where she's not allowed to say things, but she's sort of guiding the conversation, shall we say.
Survival of the fittest, I think she says, doesn't she?
She was one that says that, and he says that's an interesting phrase.
But that's not what he meant.
Actually a phrase that's used in his own work, is it?
No, he says, is it natural selection?
Descent through natural selection.
So on the island, people are disappearing.
Yeah.
People are being manipulated.
Well, disappearing is perhaps the wrong word. They're being sent to the prison stockade, but they never come out.
That's right. Mm. It turns out that they've been hung up in the butchery.
I find it quite interesting, the comparisons between the governor and the lead Silurian.
Yeah.
Because the governor is quite enthusiastic about eating the tortoises telling you which island they come from via the taste.
Yeah.
Whereas the lead Silurian is quite interested in improving the flavour of the human livestock.
Yes, a bit like the first episode of Star Trek. We're setting up history here.
Yes.
In this case, not doing the Adric thing, but setting up that the Silurians are the ones which caused us to be created by manipulating our genetics.
The reason why we haven't found the missing link, or that point in time, haven't found the missing link.
It's played quite interesting in the script that Charles is working it out, and then he comes across the missing link, and then finds out that Silurians have been tampering, so he starts to doubt himself, and then by the end of it, he's convinced that he's right, and it just doesn't make sense because the Silurians have been genetically modifying their food stock.
Mucking things around. I can't remember the name of the lead
Tulok.
Tulok. Yeah. It reminded me a hell of a lot of Davros.
Yes.
It
sounded a bit like him. It's a similar voice treatment.
Yeah, it's a similar voice treatment. And
especially when they were talking about extermination as well.
But it's the original voice treatment from, what is it? Caves of
the cave monsters. The targets would have it.
Yeah. Even some of the third eye stuff.
The third eye effect.
Be careful what we're saying there.
Yeah.
But I think what's really nice about this story is it touches on those usual Silurian tropes about that when they slept but didn't wake up, and the pathogen to wipe it out. But it feels completely original.
Yeah.
Stands out from all the Silurian Sea Devil stuff before, including the war between land and the sea.
Yeah,
it is much more original than any of the TV stuff.
The only original Silurian complete story was the first one.
The Silurians,
All the others have been...
Remakes.
Rehashes. It doesn't actually add anything new, it's just rehashes. Yeah,
exactly.
But what I like about this, in the fact that it does add something new, is the reason that they overslept is because of Tulok sabotaging the timing device as an act of revenge.
It's a very typical Big Finish thing. Yeah. Oh, there's a perceived problem here in Doctor Who canon. How can we get around it?
But we can write
an explanation.
As I said, it works, and it gives a nice explanation for everything out. It might be a Big Finish trope, but it works here.
I think also that they chose just the right actors to play the characters in this story. Yeah. They all sounded really good. There was that nice scene where the Doctor walks into the Silurian's larder and sees all the people hung up on the hooks. But he didn't say, oh, I remember why I was vegetarian now. that happened a season or two back.
Yeah. Doesn't reminisce, just not a space for it. But also, I do love the personification of Charles Darwin and Fitzwilliam, the captain. Because certainly during this period, they were great friends. When Darwin released the species book, they become opposites.
Because
they,
one follows God,
the other one follows natural determinism. So Fitzwilliam sets himself up as an opponent against Darwin.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And also you have that moment where he's in the room where they're trying to beat the Silurian Tulloch, isn't it? They're trying to beat him mentally. And he's saying, there is no God, and he's doing all in front of him and everything. So you can understand that.
And wasn't there a lot of shouting at the end?
There was, yes. It was quite a build-up, wasn't it?
Yeah,
an audio adventure.
Yeah. It ends in a verbal battle rather than...
Yeah, it does. I think that the only bit that I wasn't convinced about was they all get in the lift... And they've already announced they've got 60 seconds, and then they're sort of sabotaging the lift to go up, which I assume must be very quick because there's a big explosion happening underneath.
Well, it's pushed up.
It's like the Great Glass Elevator shooting up.
The lift in the spire, you pull about 1.5G as it goes up.
Yeah. I was also thinking it would have been nice if they'd done something similar like this, but with the First Doctor and Barbara Wright, because she got really excited last time we reviewed Reign of Terror, seeing Napoleon.
Yeah.
If she'd been there with a young, handsome, very clever, intellectual Charles Darwin, she'd been all over that. They would have had to have write William Russell out for a two-week holiday.
Just for the episode. Yeah. Could get quite jealous. I'll show you survival of the fittest.
Yeah. Queensby rule, sir. But yeah, so what I was saying, these first 50 Big Finish, they're not linked to box sets. They're all very, it's very rare that they follow up. So Project Twilight, actually, with the Sixie and Evelyn, that becomes Project Lazarus, Project Destiny.
Yeah, but there are sequels, but you got, you know, it might be a year, released a year later.
Mm-hmm. But they're all very self-contained. Yeah. You've got some really big hitters in the first 50, haven't you?
Yeah. Yeah,
some of my favourites are the first 50. Yeah. It's tailed off. I don't think they've had so many memorable ones later.
No.
But it could be because familiarity
they don't stand out as much, do they, funny enough. But one thing that did stand out about Blood Tide was we didn't know if we were going to get it, but then all of a sudden the Doctor announces that Evelyn is an adult murker.
Yes! Oh, yes. An adult one. So got to be big.
That's why it's attacking the ship. We're implying that in Warriors of the Deep, we saw a tiny baby
little wee baby.
It looked good in the Blu-ray, but it didn't sound as amazing
this
as this.
This is one of those things where, the murker sounded a lot scarier here and is probably better suited to audio than...
Yeah.
Played by Rob Sherman. William Johnson, the murker,
It was used more like the Scarazan from Terror of the Zygons, wasn't it? It had a homing device.
Yeah. It's utilised more effectively here than it was in Warriors of the Deep.
It's much easier to do a murker on audio.
It is. So look at the scales.
Strong all round.
It was really good.
It's one, like I said, it's one I like to come back to every now and again.
Yeah.
If you've listened to this Big Finish extravaganza, tell us what you think by writing in to...
Show
at
staggeringstories.net.
Woohoo.
Woohoo.
Also very cheap on Big Finish. It's about £3.99, I think.
Is it?
Oh, yeah, to download.
Wow.
It's one of the old ones, isn't it? Can you get it free on Spotify?
I think you probably can.
You can. See, I hadn't been on Spotify, so I went back on Spotify to try it. And I thought, I'll do the mutant phase, because that's a Nick Briggs, and I'm hard on his writing. So I thought, Fifth Doctor, Nyssa, Daleks, what can go wrong? Well, apparently, it's because Spotify... If they don't put an advert in between the tracks, they suddenly skip to the next story. So you're on, say, The Holy Terror.
Oh, what? No.
Yeah, so you have to keep going back and selecting back. So, yeah, they sort of randomise it.
I like Holy Terror as well.
So. Yes.
Holy Terror's a great one.
Yes. We'll have to do some of these early 50 ones.
I didn't like it when it first came out, when I first heard it, but it has grown on me. No, Holy Terror.
Yeah, a bit dark.
It's
very dark.
I didn't actually like it to begin with, but it has grown on me.
Okay. I loved Robert Jessick's Frobisher.
Just a winner, wasn't he?
Anyway, that's a different story.
Yes.
Can't get the big talking bird.
we'll do that in the future. Or have we already done it?
We've probably already done it, but okay. Who knows? If we haven't, we should. But now we've got a Crumbly's Corner.
Crumbly's Corner!
Yeah! Well, when the lights are low and the workday's done, you need a little story that's got some soul and fun. So tune your ears up close for that Crumbly's Corner sound. Best dang staggering stories that you ever have found. Yeah, that Crumbly's Corner, it'll make your whole day right. Tune in for that Crumbly's Corner burning oh so bright. Aha!
He didn't forget us.
So nice of him to send it from there inside the belly of a dinosaur.
Yes. Well, listen out for that resonance and the gurgle of the juices.
Yep.
Hello, Crumbly here. Sorry I'm not at tonight's podcast, but I'm currently sampling the free air of Hampshire at the moment. But I thought I would like to chip in with my thoughts and opinions once more.
Oh, yeah. Appreciate
it. Back in it. Bigger than ever. I am, of course, referring to the vertical cliff face of carefully coiffured and gelled hair for Captain Christopher Pike. The Strange New World steam are back and bigger than ever. The first episode sees the Enterprise thrown back in time 65 million years to a time when dinosaurs still roam the Earth and Mars is inhabited by a humanoid race who want the Enterprise as a trophy of war. All manner of adventures take place, and the long and the short of it is, and the moral of the story is, sometimes doing nothing can be the best policy. Again, Hell drops a not-so-subtle hint that she and her travel with the Doctor. To say the look on Pike's face was priceless when she mentioned that, well, was literally priceless.
He was a smirk, wasn't he?
Now, on to the second episode. This episode is very dark and very macabre indeed, with a plot that's been so literally lifted from the sci-fi horror movie Event Horizon, a ship that's been missing for numerous years, with an evil presence on board. It's the basic plot. It's a very dark and very claustrophobic episode, with a couple of scenes that had me wincing.
The ears.
The third episode, it deals with the Alpha Shift, notably Ortega and Scotty constantly sniping at each other. Some shore leave is required for all of the shift on a planet where the atmosphere turns you slightly stoned or pissed as a parrot, basically.
Yeah.
There is also a plot involving a missing shuttlecraft and a peace conference that Pike has to literally preside over when he is literally off his face. Definitely a humorous episode after the last episode. So far, the second season has episodes that can have you chuckling and also grimacing in equal measures. Now, on to a more than 30-second recommendation.
Oh, yeah. Ooh. Oh, yeah.
The Amazing Digital Circus appeared on Netflix and is all about a young woman called Pomni, who wakes up in a bizarre circus-themed virtual reality.
Okay.
Her time is spent trying to escape when she is not made to go on adventures with a mismatched gang of people in the same situation with her. Even though the reality she is trapped in is very bright and very candy cane coloured, some of the adventures she goes on are very frightening indeed. This show is definitely not for children, as there is lots of bleeped out swearing and adult themes, including mental illness and isolation, which I touched on. All in all, a very funny, very surreal, strange series. That brings my rambling to an end. Hopefully, I'll be in the studio for the next podcast. So, until then, this is me, Crumbly, saying, be seeing you.
Bye.
Bye. Bye, and happy birthday.
Oh, yes.
Happy birthday, Crumbly.
As we record this.
I can very much vouch for that Amazing Digital Circus. I watched it as well. It was one of these YouTube series made by an outfit called Gooseworks. And, it's only like 9 episodes, but the last episode, there was a limited theatrical release, and I got to go see that as well.
Is it live action?
No, it's all computer-generated
Makes sense with the title.
But, there was the mystery as to sort of who are these people, why are they all trapped in this circus, what is the deal with the AI creature who is making them go on these adventures. Just exploration in that.
Does sound quite worth reviewing.
It does. We'll have to wait a few episodes to Star Trek go on, but one to put on the list, definitely.
We shall catch up.
Yes.
Now we have another contribution.
Wait a sec. He's eyeing us because we've forgotten him again.
Oh, no!
It's all this talk of Thyloiums.
Yes. It's very needy, a needy head.
Okay. One, two, three.
Hello, head of Pertwee!
Dinky McSquirts a lot. Winky McSquirts a lot. Dinky McSquirts a lot.
Yep.
Dangerous Churchill. Nazi Spock.
The goats.
The goats.
Let's let them carry on with that, Adam. Let's go on to the next part.
Graham, Terence, Dave Zilla. I think they're the important ones.
Yes. Yes. And the Moomin behind you.
And the Moomin behind me. Sorry?
Sandy?
Sandy?
Sandy.
Sandy. Oh, Sandy. I forgot about Sandy.
Sandy. Evil cat.
Yes, the evil cat from last time.
Bent weirdly, Clara on the chair.
Yeah. And her nuclear glow. And party hat.
Still
and,
partying hard.
And is that one slightly deflated balloon?
It's two.
Two.
She's got two deflated things.
I'm still impressed that the other balloon's still pretty well going.
All the non-Clara balloons are doing fine.
Anyway, you were saying.
We have, I don't know what we call it, a Jeans Corner.
Oh, Jeannie's Corner!
Hello, everyone.
You're not Jean.
Get hello. It's me, Jean. Hello. We're sitting here in London. We're full of cheese. We're full of chicken pasta. Mm. Jean is being very, very good, as you will find out when you listen to Jean Watch. I've only had to threaten her twice.
Twice.
Ouch, that's pretty good for Karen.
She's threatening her now.
We just watched Star Trek Strange New Worlds.
Oh, loving it.
Yes. We've watched the dinosaur one, the scary one, and the funky one.
Unfortunately, watched the dinosaur one and the scary one last night, just before we went to bed. And a very, very small grey and white pussycat sneaked quietly into the living room after watching the scary one.
She did. Right, the dinosaur, they've all been so very good. This is, I'm finding this difficult because Deep Space Nine is and always will be my favourite version of Trek. Mm. But these three stories this season has been amazing.
I like Strange New Worlds. I wasn't sure when it was first proposed, but I'm actually thoroughly loving it. And of the three so far, I wouldn't want to call which one was my favourite.
No, they've all been. I mean, the dinosaur one. What a one to start on. Turns out they could have just killed that dinosaur, that lassie, because it wouldn't have made any difference. The poor girl got wiped out by an asteroid moments later. Yep. I kind of hope she hadn't woken up.
Yeah, I hope so.
Yeah, she's just wandering in the dinosaur
wherever
she feels.
And I quite liked the whole thing about it being Mars. I got the feeling that whether she had achieved a goal or not, Mars was done for. Mm-hmm. Half the planet Mars had been destroyed and it was already starting to turn into the red planet. So I suspect if she hadn't have created the asteroid belt as we know it now, it would have made any difference to Mars. But it would have made a difference to us.
Well, I have a query. I'm not overly up on my when planets went weird, but I'm sure Mars was already a red planet billions of years before the dinosaurs.
I'm fairly sure it is. And I think, but I think so was the asteroid. The fifth planet wasn't there. The asteroid belt was created.
But what the hell? It was a cracking story.
Well, none of us were there to actually witness it.
No, we
weren't. You know?
Yeah. How could we prove it? Oh, God, I sound like a flat earther now.
Although I do like the very excellent placement of the Doctor Who reference.
Yes.
That's what we
watched. Elia was in a police box. Or, sorry, a phone box.
Yes, last time she saw one of those astronomical storms.
Well, it's a space-time event. As we said at the time, wibbly-wobbly.
Timey-wimey.
The haunted spaceship one.
Oh!
That was so good. And I don't know if it's going to come back and bite the forensic scientist in the butt because ghostie was still on the ship as they pulled it away.
Yes.
Or was it just Laan going a little bit batshit crazy?
I'm kind of hoping that it's in about 14 different force field layers in wherever their equivalent area 51, District 12, or whatever the heck it is they have, because that was creepy. That really was. It was the proper haunted house.
Oh, very much so. And the bit where Sam Kirk got sucked through the window.
Oh, yeah.
You could see his mints going first a bit at a time.
Yeah.
Alien 3.
I thought it was just, it was right atmospheric.
Yep.
At one point, I thought it was actually the computer trying to get them off of the ship.
Yeah, we thought it was the ship trying to communicate with
using
them.
Using illusions,
yeah.
But...
Could be.
Also, we never found out what it was. Is she infected?
Yeah,
or...
we don't know. But
I like that
there was
a mystery.
A couple of little Easter eggs, like La'an, after she'd stabbed Kirk, telling him that his son would die the same way, when we know that that's true, or at least it was in the original.
I think it's still the same timeline.
But it was also good to see how he reacts when he thinks his son's in trouble. He smashed up the communication system, but he was doing the right thing.
Yeah, but I think also, I mean, we know that's the part of which his marriage or his relationship
partnership
has kind of like completely broken down now.
Yeah, because she's gone, because he was meant to be there 3 days ago.
And it does make you wonder, you don't get the feeling that's the first time, you know,
no.
I think there's a little bit more history there.
Well, he's also turning into his father, because he said his father would bring him little Robbie the robot toy. Sam said he would bring us all these toys to make up for not being there.
Yeah.
And he'd have given them all up just to be able to talk to him.
5 minutes. I thought that was quite sad.
Yeah. Well, that's what a couple of these have been. This one and the funky one.
Mm.
It's exploring people's psyche. Because the bits where Spock thought he was hallucinating Kirk. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know they're best friends, but Spock... needed a brother, and that's what he's become. He's starting to see Kirk as not just his best friend,
brother.
But his brother.
Yet they've only been
and a sort of sister.
Once, I know they mind melded.
And
then we went on to the one where Uhura turned into a pot smoking Big Bird.
Yeah, a pink pot smoking Big Bird.
I love that outfit.
It was so good, so good. We did wonder if they were actually still back on the planet and this was all a setup, but then we find out that Erica and Scotty had basically inhaled a year's worth of funny gas all in one because they knocked a Dragon Ball over.
Yeah. I did like that one. The fact that they had actually not knowingly requested to be together and solve this thing and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
The captain with his tattoo all over his face, and I'm sure that was Elvin. It looked like Elvin.
No, he looked like he was trying to be Chakotay and got a bit carried away.
Just a tat. And what's her name? Nurse Chapel. Bingo. With aggression.
Who knew her idea of relaxing is bingo crossed with jujitsu.
And gambling.
And La'an turning essentially a Tai Chi lesson into Fight Club and then screaming, avenge me, as she's dragged away. We've loved these. We've blitzed them in two evenings. Mm. And yeah, if the rest of the season's like this... we're going to be happy.
Oh, yes, most definitely. It's a shame it's not going to go on anymore, but on the other hand, what we've got is being really good quality, I think.
It has.
And the kind of stuff you can watch again.
So we're going to go away now and let you carry on with your podcast.
Yes.
Farewell.
Au revoir.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye. Thank you.
Miss you.
Yeah, also, I think Crumbly mentioned the Alpha shift.
Yes.
It's very rare we get any reference to their own shifts. It's always just our main team.
It's the main team. I think the only other one that's mentioned shifts is...
Lower Decks.
Lower Decks. And I think it was
and also
Jellicoe
wanted to choose
a gamma shift. But,
occasionally on Next Gen, you might see them. Data might be left in the captain's chair as everybody else changes around.
Presumably, Alpha shift is a little bit more than just that handful.
Oh, there's, presumably the entire quarter.
You have to wonder if anyone else got Shawley, who was just that shuttle.
Also,
can you imagine Pelia down on that planet?
Yeah, because she disappeared after her phone box reference.
She was
didn't
in
she?
The beginning of the first episode.
Yeah, and then that was it.
Yeah, she's one that we only get some little bits of, which is a shame because she can be pretty good fun.
She is quite fun. Yeah, obviously Scotty's the one they're trying to promote as the up-and-coming engineer. But
I do enjoy Scotty.
But we didn't even
character.
Talk about Pike's possible promotion that he was offered.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. You think he'd take it? Might that change his future?
Mm. Yeah,
he gets a desk job.
Yeah,
but no, that might bring the future closer.
Well,
because it's a desk job that gets him killed.
Well, he was fleet captain. He was fleet captain, and it wasn't killed.
Well, I know he wasn't killed, but it's what a desk job.
But a fleet captain is below a commodore, and generally implies that you're responsible for more than one ship.
Yeah.
I'm not quite sure what the distinction is between a fleet captain and a commodore.
Well, we saw a lot of commodores in the original series that were running space stations.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, not important.
Do we have any feedback?
We do have some feedback as well.
Okay. We're getting lots of audio today.
Yeah, all the audio playback today.
Are we getting lots of more audio than we've actually been speaking ourselves?
I think we might do.
Yeah,
this is the laziest of podcasts
for us.
Yeah. Okay, a bit of audio feedback from Reese.
Hello, Reese.
Hello, Reese.
Hello, Staggerers, and hello, Head of Pertwee, and hello, other inanimate objects of the podcast crew. I won't name you all individually because that takes too long. I would like to start it off by sending my best wishes to Jean. Hopefully the recovery is smooth and not too long, but long enough for healthcare workers to give you the best care that you need, and hopefully you can take the time to recover.
Things are
thinking
moving,
of
Reese.
You, my friend.
It's going well.
Now, it might be easy to keep this feedback brief because I haven't seen any of the things that you reviewed last time. Surprisingly, as a big Terry Pratchett fan, I haven't seen Good Omens, which I think is because I might have been burnt by other adaptations of Terry Pratchett's work. Of course, it's with Neil Gaiman as well, and I'm frankly put off some Neil Gaiman stuff just because of recent events of the last few years and accusations, and I know some of them were thrown out of court, but other ones are still going, but whatever. The whole thing is a bit ick. So I didn't watch it at first because I was worried that it wouldn't be good. I heard that it was good, but I still haven't gotten around to it just because of various things. And then recently it's just like, well, no, I don't want to watch something Gaiman might benefit from. Anyway, and I can't even remember the Doctor Who story you reviewed. That's bad. I didn't watch either of those things to the point where I can't remember one of them. But one thing that I do remember you mentioning and that I have seen twice already is Spider-Man Brand New Day.
Okay.
I didn't mention that in terms of things I was looking forward to because it was so close.
Yeah.
And I think I saw it. Actually, the second time I saw it was the day this podcast came out. The same day was the second day I saw it. So I just didn't mention it because it was a week away from when I recorded. So
Jumanji.
Yeah, I'll talk about it now. But I will try and stay spoiler-free because it's still pretty new. I don't know if you guys are reviewing it and if you've seen it. And I don't know if your listeners have either. So they might have not seen it and skipped your review of it if you have reviewed it. So I'll be careful in how I talk about it.
Okay.
But I will say, might be the best Spider-Man film ever made.
Oh, right. Yeah. Okay.
You could maybe throw a bit of a caveat in there and say maybe the best live-action film, because I really do like the Spider-Verse films as well. Yeah. The animated ones are really, really good. Great plots, great energy, and the animation style is great. But if you're talking about live-action, I think this might be it. I think this is really, really good.
Fourth film.
The best it really film, benefits from being a step above some of the other Marvel stuff recently visually. And two of my big major concerns with Marvel for quite a while now, sadly, has been, and it hasn't really been addressed until recently, has been their CGI, in that a lot of it feels a bit weightless. It doesn't have much texture to it, so it looks a bit plasticky or just not convincingly real. I want things to be as photorealistic as possible. It's amazing how things now don't look as real. And actually, like Iron Man, for example, I keep using that as an example because 2008 Iron Man, where they had a much smaller budget because Marvel as a brand, both Marvel Studios didn't even exist, but the movies and the comics were in danger in 2008. But Iron Man in that looked better than it did in Endgame, which you'd think he would look his best. But no, they were rushing things. And anyway, didn't look as good. And another thing that happened, and it's kind of ironic, probably the wrong word, but I really like the Russo brothers. I think they're really good directors, and they did some of my favorite Marvel films, Endgame being one of them.
Yeah.
But I really like the Captain America films they did. I like the grounded, espionage-y, thriller kind of thing that they did. And the color grading they did fitted those films a lot, where there are lots of concrete buildings, and it's spy stuff, and it was quite washed out, and the shadows weren't very dark. They looked quite grey overall, the films.
Yeah.
And that works, like I said, for a thriller kind of espionage thing. But they also did Avengers films, and it was quite washed out. Whereas Joss Whedon, with the first Avengers film, Marvel's Avengers Assemble, as it's called over there, as much as I'm not a big fan of Joss Whedon anymore, because of things about him. But he made the right creative choice. He made it so colourful and larger than life, and I think that works really well. And then James Gunn sort of did a mix of the two with the Guardians of the Galaxy trilogy. So I think more colour is better, and this film has that. Yeah. So did Fantastic Four, First Steps. I thought it looked lovely because of that, and just the general design of that is really good too. Really good. And Wonder Man, the TV show, which is such a weird thing going on with that because season one came out at the start of the year. It is really good, really well received. So well received that the man playing Wonder Man, the lead actor, got nominated for an Emmy for his performance.
Yeah.
And so they announced season two. And then just a few days ago, they cancelled season two.
Yeah.
I don't know what's going on. Very confusing. A lot of African Americans are noticing that they also cancelled Blade. And they also haven't announced a new season of Ironheart. And they're saying, oi, what's this with the black-led projects? What's going on, Marvel? Wow. Really not a good look.
No.
But speaking of looks, just to get back to what I was saying, Wonder Man looked great. So does this. CGI and color grading made this film look really good. But it also has an excellent story. And it also has top quality performances. I think it might be Tom Holland's best outing in anything I've seen him in, frankly. Okay. He's really, really good. And Zendaya is great as well. Just the whole cast is really good at their jobs. And they shine in this. And to try and stay spoiler-free, I will wrap it up by saying that someone else reviewed it, and I like this line. They're a big Spider-Man fan and have been for years. Love the comics, love the games, love the movies. And he likes what the comics have done, but the films have never done, which is to Harry Potter Spider-Man, in that let it grow up with him. So he's no longer in high school.
Yeah,
he would have gone to university, but the events of No Way Home got in the way of that. So he's growing up. He would have been a university student. He would have done, graduated from that and moving on to a career. But of course, he's throwing the Spider-Man element in there and he's being a superhero. And anyway, I like that. I agree with that sentiment that it's letting him grow up more than we've seen on screen before. And so, I like that a lot. I think that'll do because there's not much more I can say without talking about the spoilery details. And I can't talk about the other things you reviewed. So yeah, thanks for the podcast, guys. Best wishes to Gene again. And I'll speak to you later.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I have to agree with Reese a lot about the CGI and the last half a dozen Marvels. They don't have the time. They're not giving them the time.
Yeah, it varies film by film. But
a lot of the time it's so over the top. It's just, it's very busy, isn't it?
Yeah.
It doesn't focus on one particular part. Yeah.
They've just thrown money at it. They haven't bothered.
Yeah.
And certain directors haven't understood how CGI works.
Yes. I think half the problem is they're still rewriting the end as they're shooting, and even in post-production where they go back and they do huge reshoots, which gives no time for the CGI to be done after those reshoots. But anyway, we'll see what Doomsday is like.
Yes.
That's going to be the real test.
I haven't seen it yet. Is it out locally, Spider-Man?
Oh, yeah, it's out right now. It's been out for about a couple of...
I want to go with my...
It's the second week now. I mean, it's already grossed over $1 billion in the cinemas.
I know it's stolen the crown on the grosses, maximum amount of money it can make. But I'm waiting for my beloved to come back so we can see it together.
Yeah, I need to watch it. It won't be this week. I haven't got time this week.
I was trying to get to it, but it's been sold out in some of the cinemas I looked at. So I mean, it's obviously doing really, really well. So
it should hang around for a while. Yeah. So we've got a couple of weeks at least.
Yeah. Yes.
And
any more feedback?
And a bit of feedback from Tim.
There's
Tim.
More. Ooh. Hello, Tim.
Hello, Staggerers. Hello, Head of Pertwee. Hello, the rest of the menagerie. It's Tim here from Tim's Take On. Now, this Odyssey movie.
Oh, right.
It has been so hard to find a way of seeing it because it is so incredibly long.
Yes.
So I instead came up with a mad plan of a Sunday.
A cunning plan?
Because we have what they call an IMAX cinema in Cambridge. It's over at the Light Cinema on the other side of town to me, about half an hour bike ride away.
Just digital.
It's what they call a sort of multiplex IMAX. So it's a very big wide screen. So it's a form of IMAX.
Kind of.
And they were showing the Odyssey for one of the earliest screening of the day. It was at 10 o'clock in the morning on a Sunday.
Right.
And
that's kipper time.
Me being me, had to make it some kind of mad plan. Now, recently, they've been re-releasing Marilyn Monroe movies.
They have, I've seen that.
To mark the 100th anniversary of her birth. Previous week I had seen Gentlemen Prefer Blondes on a big screen for the first time. And I went, can I cram in a Marilyn Monroe movie after The Odyssey? Yep. So that's exactly what I did. I went to see The Odyssey at 10 o'clock in the morning. What did I think of The Odyssey? Well, it's not a bad film, but it is very slow.
Right.
It was sold to me, and I'd seen a documentary on BBC Four a few days before by Dan Snow. And it was sold to me, this Odyssey movie, as not necessarily a hero returning from war, but certainly a man returning from war who was suffering from PTSD, who was not in a great state, and it's sort of all the horrible things that happened to him and his crew on this journey home. The Odyssey starts, and Christopher Nolan's first thought is, oh, let's introduce you to his family. And it must be the best 30 or 40 odd minutes of, at least the first 30 minutes of the film is his family. And I'm going, can we see Odysseus soon? This film's quite long. Can we like get on with the actual story? Mm-hmm. That said, there was much to enjoy in it. I did particularly enjoy the Cyclops sequence, where people like us who see a lot of films and TV these days immediately look at things and go, oh, well, CG. Mm-hmm. And, well, it's more complicated than that, and they actually used a whole host of techniques in that Cyclops sequence, which only make it more impressive. Mm. I think my other favourite sequence was when they managed to get back to the ship, and they get attacked while out at sea. And at first I thought this was some kind of sea creature, but instead it turns out to be something reaching out to them from caves above them. People who know a lot more about Greek mythology from me would have the name of it to hand and everything. And then the end of the Odyssey was fascinating because it reminded me of Robin Hood.
Right.
Odysseus gets back home to his family, but he's in disguise as a beggar. He's got a hood on, people don't know it's him.
Hooded man.
And all this time while he's been away, people have been writing him off as dead. And all these suitors are trying to marry his wife and become the king of this kingdom, this Greek kingdom. And so in the end, his wife has set them a seemingly impossible task, and that's that there was this bow that only Odysseus could string, because it was so tight. And so it gets handed round, all these suitors trying to string this bow, and none of them manage it. And then up comes this beggar man. And you had to string this bow and then fire an arrow through a set of axes lying opposite each other. And he manages this. And I was watching this and I went, this feels very Robin Hood to me. Pretend to be a beggar man and then be really good at something with a bow.
Presumably but Robin had stolen it from him.
As I said, it was a good film, but it just felt way too long. It made me want to go off and watch Oppenheimer again, which I much preferred. Even though it's been on television in the past few months, this is still the only time I've seen Oppenheimer was at the cinema a couple of years back.
Yeah, I love Oppenheimer.
In the Barbenheimer-ness of it all. So yeah, I finished watching The Odyssey, had myself probably too big a lunch, because five guys do something called a bacon burger. Mm-hmm. And while I was stood at their screen thing, it said, oh, do I want an extra patty, thinking that it would be two patties and some bacon.
No,
then it arrived and it was three patties and some bacon.
Oh dear.
And I could not finish that. I ate most of it. I could not finish it. Then I went into town and watched Some Like It Hot on a big screen for the first time. That movie is still hilarious to this day.
Okay.
That movie is, I don't know how old now. It's over 60 years old. It came out in the late 1950s. And it is so, so funny. I've still yet to see every Marilyn Monroe movie, but that is still my favourite Marilyn Monroe movie. And to see it, even in a small cinema audience, there must have only been about 25, 30 of them, 30 of us. But to see it with an audience makes it so much funnier because there's other people there laughing away with you. Mm-hmm. As I record this, we are... In the timey-wimey way that your podcast works of being bi-weekly, certain things will have happened by the time you actually play this out. But here goes.
Right.
In a week from when I record this, let me see, what's the time? Yes, as I record this, I will have landed in Spain for a two-night stay.
Eclipse.
For my second attempt at eclipse chasing.
Yeah.
For there is a total eclipse of the sun coming that passes the line of totality.
Is it in Klingon?
Passes through northern Spain. So I've spent the past couple of weeks having booked this
two-night stay in Spain
in Bilbao months ago. I've spent the past couple of weeks researching Bilbao and trying to find out the best place to look at the eclipse from, and it turns out, usefully, they've got a funicular railway that takes you up above the city and gives you a good view of the sky. And then also recently I've had to add Bilbao to the BBC weather app, and I have been all over that like a rash in the past few days going, clear skies, clear skies, clear skies at about 8 o'clock at night when the eclipse happens, please, please.
Clear here tomorrow.
Yeah.
Ooh, other things, other bits of news I could bring you. Me and my brother were lucky enough to inherit some money earlier this year. So, my brother being my brother has barely spent it on anything.
Right.
Me being me has been ticking things off long-term to-do lists, long-term lists of things that I've had listed on various places like eBay and what have you. And then the other thought that occurred to me earlier this year was, I can afford to do Gallifrey 1 for the first time in years. So I am booked to go to next year's Gallifrey 1. I don't know if any of you are coming. By all accounts, it's the penultimate Gallifrey 1.
Oh. Trump.
By the time...
Not going to America.
I've got the convention ticket. I've got the flights sorted. I could afford to go premium economy this time, which was wonderful.
Nice.
The only thing that's less convenient is the convention hotel had sold out. The Marriott had sold out. So I then grabbed a map of LA and I went, okay, what's the next nearest hotel? I went, oh, there's one just across the road. Is there any rooms available in Gallifrey one weekend for that? Nope, that one had sold out too. So then I started zooming the Google map out and going, okay, where could I stay that's not too far away?
It's near an airport.
And I put
so
myself into a Hilton, which is, I think, about 10 minutes walk away from the Marriott.
That's not bad.
But unlike the two times I stayed at the Marriott, this Hilton actually serves breakfast.
Ooh, oh,
which
okay.
is wonderful, because the two Gallifreys I did in 2011 and 2013, you got up in the morning, you did your morning ablutions, and then you had to go on a walk to the nearest fast food place to
Denny's.
Buy yourself breakfast.
Yeah.
Which felt horribly inconvenient.
Yeah, we used that Denny's a lot when we were there.
I have been rabbiting on for a while, but there's about one more thing to cover, which... by the time you play this out on the podcast, will have happened.
Oh, yeah.
And that's this year's Sharda Tour, which in recent days we've been juggling around with dates. Mm-hmm. And we now settled on the 16th of August. So, as I say, I speak to you from the past. It will have happened by the time
actually,
you
go
play
out
this out. But,
just before the morning of...
There will be an extension this year due to the addition of what we're now calling the Cambridge TARDIS.
Yeah.
Which sits at the Zion Baptist Church on Hills Road.
Okay. Now, look forward to seeing that.
So this means, let me see, yes, when we've finished at Emmanuel College, St. Sid's, instead of immediately looping round, we will turn right instead of left.
Yeah.
And head over to somewhere called Parker's Peace, head over Parker's Peace, and then head down Hills Road a bit, cross Hills Road, and those on the tour this year can... see for a few minutes the Cambridge TARDIS, which is at the Zion Baptist Church. Yep. I have messaged the Reverend Jason, I keep forgetting his surname, but I've messaged him, is it okay if I bring a group of people along that day? He's not replied to my message on Facebook, so I'm hoping that's a positive.
Well, if he's a reverend, you should understand.
Being a Sunday, I did get the church's website up and check when he has services that day. They would appear to be in the morning and in the evening. So okay. We should be all right, as we'll be in the afternoon.
We'll get wrapped into
a little... Oh, I have been rabbiting on for about 11
minutes
now.
You're there to worship
now, so
that.
I will say goodbye to you all. And I will see, hopefully, at least Adam on this year's Shudder Tour.
I'll certainly
be there. For now. Hello again, Staggerers. After I'd sent that previous email and piece of audio, I realised I'd made a horrible error and entirely forgotten to mention Gene. So this is a... hope you're feeling better soon message to Gene Riddler.
No,
I'm not
dead.
A big fan of the term get well soon. It feels way too much like an instruction. So
get well
you're feeling
or else.
Better soon from Tim of Tim's Take On. Bye for now.
Thank you, Tim.
Thank you, Tim.
Thank you.
Yes, I'll certainly be there this coming Sunday, which is the day this podcast goes out. Yes. All being well.
Day after Loxwood.
Day after Loxwood Joust, Russ's busy weekend.
Yes. It is a very busy weekend.
But yes, I'll be there for the Charter Tour. I don't know if anybody else is going to join me, but it'd be good if you can.
I'm not sure yet. It all depends on babysitting.
I'll have to see how it goes. I've got a few little family wrinkles at the moment, but... I'm not going to count it out completely.
It's always a pleasure going on the tour, though, isn't it? It's always a lot of fun. You should have some nice weather.
Yeah, it's going to be really nice weather, I think.
Yeah.
I think it might be slightly cloudy, but that's going to actually be nice.
That would be a relief doing all that walking around Cambridge.
Yeah. So I think that is it for feedback.
Wow. Okay. We didn't have to do much in that last half, did we?
No,
not really, no.
We could have left and you could have just spliced it all together.
I could have done.
Us at the end.
Could have had a small nap.
Yeah. Okay.
I was going to say lead us out crumbly, but...
Well, he's dead.
Yeah.
Yes.
All right, on his birthday as well.
Oh, yes, dead on his birthday.
And so that brings us to the end of Yes, Now the podcast.
Oh.
But never fear.
Not again.
Next time there will be more of the same. More news and reviews. More who, old and new. And more fun for Volley and Jollity. And I got those in totally the wrong order. So you know what? Live with it.
Mix it up.
Mix it up a bit.
Again, we can spice it together.
Yeah.
So until that...
B for blood.
Bollocking.
Ooh.
Blubbery.
Balls.
Come bouncing.
Buzzingly.
Bucolically.
Towards us. This is me, Jay, saying cheerio.
Goodbye.
Farewell.
This isn't life in the fast lane. It's life in the oncoming traffic lane.
You have been listening to the Staggering Stories podcast, episode 504, with Adam J. Purcell, Jay Duran, As the Man, and the real Keith Dunn. Views specified here represent the speakers and don't represent the other speakers or the site. No copyright infringement is intended, and this has been an El Presidente production for www.staggeringstories.net.
See, the thing is...
It's a record.
The thing is, Cowan isn't here, so you can't fight each other in mental will battle over the eyes.
I stopped breathing just in case there's a squeaky nostril. Yeah. I don't want a whistling nostril.
And probably a roar of some description of a beastie.
Stomach.
Well, it could be a stomach roar.
Can we not do that live? Something can do a roar.
Okay. Yeah. Well. Do you want a roar now?
We can try.
Roar.
Okay.
I can't do it that well. Jay, after you. No, I can't do that. Want to have a go, Adam? Yeah.
Okay.
Well, that was then, a car.
car will do. And then sounds perhaps something along the lines of...
So just like that, then.
It's like Wurzel Gummidge eating his cake.
Off his head on cake.
I've hurt my throat.
Are we recording?
We are recording.
Recording.
Okay.
After all that, we better be bloody recording.
Oh, I think I took a picture of myself.
No, unintended dick pic.
Stop it!